Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome once again to another edition of Sunday Night. Hey, we're on Sunday night. Whoa! Not Tuesday night, not Monday night. Yeah, Sunday night. Wow. Oh, we've had quite a year. Quite a year so far. Starting to get things straightened out at work so that I can be here on Sunday night, but it's not there yet. So expect a few more of those odd nights. I might even do a Wednesday night show. I don't know. But we're coming along, so things are getting back in order. You know, we're looking at a number of things going on. You know, of course it's Christmas time. Sales were up this year for Christmas. Good news for everybody. Yay. Yeah, interesting thing. We talk about the economy under Trump is doing pretty good. I just heard some interesting stat today and doing some looking at it. But the Russell 2000, I don't know how many of you follow the Russell 2000. But let's see here, for the year-to-date, 1 year. Okay. Russell 2000 is kind of a mid-cap. What is the average company out there doing? Just what is that average company doing? Now, it started the year at... About 1550. I'm looking at the chart here. Let's start off about 1550. It is now down to 1487. No. Let's get that back. I was saying that yesterday it opened at 1477, hit a high of 1485, and it had a low of 1440 during the day. That was the day. So it kind of opened at 1480, went down. It was down to 14. Hit 1440, closed, came up at the end of the day. So closed at 14. Previous close is 1477, 1450. Looks like 1452 is where it closed. 1448 is where it closed. So that was it dropped 1%. A lot of stocks fell yesterday. So usually when you look at stocks, you look at the Dow Industrial Average. Now, the Dow Industrial Average is the 30 top companies in America. So that'd be the Microsofts, the Apples, IBM, a lot of the tech companies in that. Procter & Gamble would be a non-tech. DuPont, the top companies. So if you hear about... There's the Fortune 500, there's the Fortune 100, but the Dow is the top 30. Biggest companies you know. There's the S&P 500, which is the top 500 companies. Little better, I think that's probably the best indicator of what the economy is really doing is look at the S&P. Dow gets all the press. S&P doesn't get so much, but if you are into the stock market, you follow the S&P because a lot of those investment funds that you get into, just drawing a blank right now on what they're called, but yeah, they will purchase more than one stock. Put all their eggs in one basket. But they do a splattering of S&P 500 companies unless they're in a specific index or specific market to do something different. Some of those guys are out there, you know, who's the best manager of this? Yeah. So, you know, they're always trying to see who can wheel and deal and get the best deals and get the most for the client. Some of them are index funds. So they will purchase, whenever they get so many stocks, they go purchase a proportionate amount of that index so that their fund always follows what the index does. Other funds do different things. I had a fund at one time that followed the Russell, the mid caps. Now, if I had done that for this year, over the course of the year, it started a little over $1,500. It's right now $1,440. So, would have dropped a little bit. Most of those drops have been since September. And a lot of that is due to the fact that now Trump's agenda is not going to be followed. See, a lot of it's based on optimism and pessimism, but based on what's going on in politics. A lot of it's based on what's going on in the economy. You know, if we can, you know, if trade deals are being struck that are favorable to the company, then the company goes up. Oftentimes, they actually look at earnings reports. So if a company turns in a better than expected earnings report, the value of their stock goes up. Do this one's not as good, it goes down. So don't base your politics on what the economy is doing, because that's finicky. Now, we all want a politician that gets us into a better position. I mean, remember Bill Clinton that said it's the economy, stupid. And Bill Clinton did a good job on the economy. I'll give him credit for that. But it wasn't all Bill Clinton's fault that it was good. Just like it wasn't all Ronald Reagan's fault that it was good under him. Yeah, some of their major policies got followed, but sometimes it was some of the other little intangible things. There's a lot of variables that go into the economy. If you study economics, you know, you'll spend maybe a semester doing microeconomics, a semester doing macroeconomics. Macroeconomics is you know, what the economy and as a whole is doing. What makes things go up, what makes things go down, what sets the prices. You know, there's a little curve that you learn to do in economics, you know, supply and demand. You know, learn all about supply and demand. Yeah. What, you know, why is the price of dirt so low? There's a lot of it out there and nobody wants it. Okay. Why is the price of fertilizer so high? Nobody wants to sell it and there's a big demand for it in the agriculture business. Okay. So supply and demand. And you learn all that when you take an economics class. So I'm not going to go through all that with you right now. That's going to take too much. But we're going to get into a little bit of prophecy today. We're going to talk a little bit about what went on in the book of Matthew and how that was done. But let's take a commercial break first, and then we'll get back into that. You're listening to Sunday Night right here on Eagle's Nest Radio.
Double sixes. Can't hit me now.
Let's see.
Oops. Snake eyes. I get to go backwards. Hitting you.
Hey, you can't go backwards in backgammon.
Sure you can. It's in the rules. If a player rolls snake
Let
eyes.
Let me see. You wrote that in there.
So it's still in the rule book.
Rules. They provide standards for people to live by.
Oh, yeah? Well, if I roll a 4, I get to knock your pieces on the floor.
There are standards God wrote for us in the Bible.
Oh, yeah? And if I roll a 5, I get to kick you in the foot.
Ow! Okay, I get to hit you on the head.
Wait.
What?
You didn't roll the dice yet.
Oh, yeah. 9! Ow!
As we walk away from God's standards and create our own rules, we create confusion.
Ow!
7!
If things aren't working out for you in your life, give the Bible a chance.
Let's play something less violent.
Hockey?
My rules.
Another message from Lifeline Productions, the comic strip of radio, at lifelinepro.com.
And let's see, there we go. Here we go. We're back live on Sunday night right here on Eagle's Nest Radio. I'm your host, Tim Roden. We are looking at prophecy. One of the things I was known for on the previous radio channel was being a prophecy teacher, so we'll cover a little bit of that. Mostly what I did was we looked at the experts. We looked at what they were doing. Sometimes I gave my own opinion, but my opinion really doesn't come for much, does it? It's what God does that counts. So we're all trying to get that standard. What is, did God really say there? So let's look at a few scripture verses here. I am going to pull up over here my laptop. I love this digital age. Yeah, you got up a studio in your house. You can, Got multiple devices going. Let's see, where was that program? There we go. We'll bring that up. All right, Matthew chapter 2. Now Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea in the days of Herod the king. Behold, there came men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he born, King of the Jews? For we have seen a star in the east and come to worship him." That there was Magi. And if you listen to some of Chuck Missler's teaching, you find out that he actually and didn't make the Jewish scripture. But within in the writings of Daniel that stayed in Babylon, stayed in Persia, the Magi were kind of kingmakers. They were the ones that appointed the next king in Persia. So as the Persian Empire grew, they would appoint the next king. So when they came to Jerusalem, where is he born, King of the Jews? Kind of had Herod in a little turmoil. Magi are supposed to appoint kings in Persia, not in Israel. My country subscribes and people together say, demanding where the Christ was born, Messiah, in Bethlehem, Judea, written prophet. Which prophet was that? It was written by the prophet, saying that Bethlehem, Judea. Written by the prophet, "For thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art thou not least among the princes of Judah. Out of thee will come a governor that shall rule my people Israel." So when they came, they said, "Oh, we're not going to just appoint them. We want to appoint the right person. We're going to look at the scripture and say, where is he born?" And so they asked him, and all the scribes knew it. Okay, did Herod know it? I don't know if he knew it, but they asked the scribes, and they knew it. You remember Paul? He knew it. He was smart as a whip. When he figured out that Jesus fulfilled the prophecies, he was able to go back to the scriptures and pinpoint little things that showed the way. He used scripture, Old Testament scripture, to verify New Testament writing. Andy Stanley made a statement that we need to get our Old Testament thinking out of Christianity. Wrong! Wrong! If because that's what was used to prove Jesus is the Messiah. We get rid of the Old Testament, and we get rid of a lot. But thou Ephrata, Bethlehem Ephrata is what it says in the prophecy. When Herod had heard the wise men inquiring them diligently, so what time the star appeared, and sent them to Bethlehem and said, go search diligently for the young child. When you have found him, bring news to me that I may come and worship him also. He didn't want to come worship him. Everybody knew it, knew Herod's game. Maybe the Magi didn't. I don't know about you, but yeah, if you really don't know their game, yeah, they'll come to you and say, hey, Tim, yeah, once you find out what's going on, you come tell me, okay? You've seen these people. You come tell me. We'll do this together, okay? And when we get done, yeah, you get another party in on it, somebody you know and trust. You say, you know that guy said come there? Don't trust him. Oh, okay. But he told him, no, don't do it, okay? That's what, kind of what happens here. But go into Bethlehem and search the diligently for the young child, and when you found him, bring word again to me that I will come and worship him. And he heard that king, they departed. Lo, the star, which they saw in the east, went before them until it stood at the place where the young child was. And they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. If you ever want to, there is a video out there that you probably need to go watch if you want to understand this one. Because, and I don't remember who exactly did it, but there is a video about the Star of Bethlehem, I think is the name of it. And he shows you with software that accurately goes back, year 2000, and shows the stars where they were at that time. Shows the star appearing the first time, and then again later, in the exact direction that you would follow to get to Jerusalem. Was it magic? Not really. But it was a sign that God had put far in advance. Daniel knew it was going to happen, and he had wrote it down. So the wise men, when they saw it, they actually followed it. Come to the house where the young Mary was and worshiped it, and opened up their treasures, presented gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I'm not going to go into all that, but they were being warned of God in a dream. Not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country another way. So God told them, don't go to Herod. We know what Herod's going to do. Don't go see him. Okay? And when they had departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Again, dreams is what they're using. Arise, take the young child, flee to Egypt. But thou be filled for Herod was seeking to destroy him. They rose, young child by night, and departed into Egypt. At the death of Herod, they fulfilled what was spoken of the Lord, saying, out of Egypt, I have called my son. That's a baffling passage to prophecy experts. Because when you read the passage, the context, remember we tell you context, context, context. Context tells you everything. The context is the nation of Israel. Wait a minute. Did he get this wrong? No, he didn't get it wrong. The nation of Israel was called out of Egypt. Now Jesus is called out of Egypt. Same exact method. It's a type. It's called typology. We have types all over the New Testament, all over the Old Testament. The rock. Jesus says, I am the rock. And Peter the Little Rock, okay? You know, Petra. I'm the Petros. It's a rock that they that was struck in the wilderness. It's supposed to be spoken to the second time, but it was struck, and therefore Moses didn't get to go into the promised land, right? You strike the rock once, you speak to it the second time. The rock has been struck. So now anyone who calls upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Not who crucifies the Lord again. Who calls upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. See how that works? It's typology. And Herod had already been mocked by the wise men and was exceedingly wroth and sent forth and slew the children that were in Bethlehem and all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the diligently acquired of the wise men. So at this point, they thought he was under two somewhere. Could he have been two? He may have been, but he was under two. So he went and killed everybody 2 years and under. That was fulfilled, which was spoken by Jeremy, or Jeremiah, the prophet. I heard Dr. David Jeremiah speaking on this today. He thought Jeremiah was the greatest prophet ever. You wouldn't be biased on that, would he? I don't know. I think Isaiah was probably the greatest prophet, but Jeremiah was pretty great, or at least of the writing prophets. Greatest prophet, I think, was Elijah. And then Elisha got a double blessing, double portion of blessing, but neither one of those two wrote. So we just have what was written by Isaiah, wrote 66 chapters. Jeremiah wrote a little less than that. Saying in Ramah was there a voice heard, lamentation, weeping, great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and would not be comforted because they were not. Who's Rachel? Well, Rachel was the wife of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Rachel, the wife of Jacob, was weeping. Interestingly enough, her grave is just outside of Bethlehem and is at the spot where Jesus was born. There is a tower, Tower of the Flock, that is at the spot where her grave is. So Rachel here refers to the women of Bethlehem weeping for her children, would not be comforted, as they were not. Let's do a search here. Okay, I'll do a search. Let's see if we can find it. Well, Matthew chapter 2, we can look at Jeremiah 31, 31:15. Thus saith the Lord, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted for her children because they were not. Thus saith the Lord, refrain thy voice from weeping, thine eyes from tears, for thy work shall be rewarded, saith the Lord, and they shall come again to the land of the enemy. What was the context? 31:13. Then shall the virgin rejoice and dance, both young and old together, and I will turn their mourning to joy, their comfort them, and make them rejoice from sorrow. I will satiate the souls of the priests with fatness, and my people shall be satisfied with my goodness, saith the Lord. Then thus saith the Lord, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted because they were not. It has to do with the loss of the children due to the going to go into Babylon. Now, there's a lot of death in that final conquest of Israel by Nebuchadnezzar. But they returned and rejoicing. 70 years later, they returned. Interestingly enough, what happened 70 AD? Ooh, that was bad too. But, you know, we got salvation because of it. A lot of rejoicing in salvation. Okay, and when Herod was dead, the angel appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, arise, bring the young child and her mother to the land of Israel. And they were dead, which for they are dead, which they sought the young man. They arose and took the young child and mother, came to the land of Israel. But they heard that Archelaus reigned in Judea in the room of his father Herod. And they were afraid to go thither. Notwithstanding, being warned in a dream, they turned aside, went to part of Galilee, came to Nazareth, which was fulfilled. It was spoken by a prophet, he shall be called a Nazarene. Now, wait a minute here. Where in the Bible is he going to be called a Nazarene? Well, if you look in, let's see here. He shall be called a Nazarene. Actually, what it says in the Old Testament is he is called a branch. So in the scripture, the branch, the Hebrew word there is Nazarene. There you have it. How is prophecy interpreted? It is. So that's all the time we got for tonight. We'll catch you next time, either here, there, or in the air.
I stood and watched an eagle fly, spread his wings and soared across. So gracefully he flew, rising effortlessly. I wanted to know how to be free. Tiny fingers curled round mine, perfectly formed, newborn, the image of. Of God somehow escapes man.
creation he was waiting to reveal. His purpose.